The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. We're back, and we left you just a short couple of weeks ago looking forward to a tight three-team title race at the top and the imminent arrival of Gareth Bale to inject some superstar quality into the league. What could have possibly gone wrong in the couple of weeks since then? Well, here to pick our way through where we stand right now, I am your regular host, Steve Crooks, and I'm joined by our reunited panel of experts on all matters Chinese football. Cameron Wilson, finally back safely in Shanghai. Great to have you back on board, Cam.
Hi, Steve. I'm glad to be back. It was a marathon 66-hour journey from Edinburgh to Shanghai, and not what I particularly want to do in that manner again.
It was almost a typhoon, almost. And, of course, as well, joined from Beijing by Brandon Chambers. How are you doing this week, Brandon?
I've had better weeks, but we'll get into that soon, I'm sure.
I think we will. I mean, and we have to start by, you know, looking over the table. We were getting so excited about what looked like three really top teams going at it hammer and tongs for the rest of the season when we left off for our little break. And, well, one side kept winning, the other two didn't. Cam, is it already time to crown Evergrande champions at this point?
No, not yet. But, of course, it's looking that way. As you said, it was very exciting just a few weeks ago, but unfortunately Guan and SIPG have let us down in terms of the title race, so unfortunately it's not looking very good right now for an exciting end to the season.
Yeah, did it have the feeling of a real kind of last chance saloon title decider, that big Evergrande Guan game at the weekend, Brandon?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I disagree with Cameron, the season's over. Yeah, it's 7 points. It's not mathematically over, and the sides shouldn't play like it. I mean, they should definitely want to and do whatever they can to catch up. It's not time to start putting in the scrubs and looking to next year. But it's kind of hard to imagine this Evergrande side dropping 8 points between now and then.
Yeah, and we'll get a little bit into what's happened to the sides in second and third, both today and then maybe in more depth over the next couple of weeks as we can really do a bit of a post-mortem. But I think Brandon hit the nail on the head, Cam. It's hard to see Evergrande dropping any points at the moment. I mean, it's not a popular opinion, but do we need to give them a bit of credit? This is a side that's won 13 on the bounce and look like they're cruising to the title.
Yeah, they have done really well on the park. I think the negativity and the criticism of them is perhaps a little bit misplaced. It depends on who you look at it. I think, yeah, they're playing with a squad which is conforming to the rules, but there's just so much massive speculation around them regarding the naturalised players and who's going to become Chinese. Is Ericsson going to become Chinese? Seems like a Goulart, maybe. Yeah, to some extent, that's going to influence people's opinions towards him. Up to this point, yeah, fair enough. It seems to have been done on a park, but yeah, there's a big cloud hanging over them.
Well, the question that I'd ask is not so much about the team. I mean, the team has obviously been amazing, and they should get credit. I mean, I was talking even before the Elkison transfer, well before that, Evergrande was the team that I more feared than SIPG, and with good reason. It's proven out. But I think the interesting question, I think this might be more for a future discussion or later on when we talk about Schmidt a little, but should Cannavaro get more credit for what he's done or what the team has done in, by extension, what he's done there?
I think that's a good point because, you know, he's a coach that we've criticised and others have criticised quite a lot in the past. I mean, he's not, other than that one good year at the team that used to be known as Quanzhen, right? He's not had the greatest track record, but the results this year do speak for themselves. And I think you both hit on it there. There's lots of question marks about, you know, how close they are to the CFA with future regulations and some of these Brazilians that might be Chinese in the future. And does that hang over this year? But I mean, looking at this year, they've got a squad of Chinese born and bred players, many of whom are kind of under 25, you know, refreshing that old guard that grew old together and won all of those titles. And they're playing good football, that they're winning lots of games. Do you give the coach much credit for that, Cam?
I don't know. It's difficult. I think I've criticised Cannavaro a lot in the past for not having done anything particularly spectacular. This season, yeah, he's done really well. You can't criticise a team which has won, as you said, 13 games in a row. But again, they've had the nous in the transfer market to bring in probably the best Chinese players going, for the most part. So he's working with, he's got a lot of material to work with, put it that way.
That is true.
And when we talk yeah. about the youth of that side, let's not give them that much credit, because none of those guys have gone through Evergrande. They've all been bought, and many of them have been bought in the last two seasons through preferential treatment or not. Most of those players, those young players that they played, I think maybe even all of them have arrived in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not a self-developed side of young players. They did, you know, go big in the market for lots of them. And yeah, those question marks over transfers will undoubtedly continue. I know we've got a couple of listener questions on those as well. Do you think, Brandon, that in a way, this idea of bringing in all of these, you know, mid to late career Brazilians and naturalizing them next year might actually work against the CFA and Evergrande in terms of these guys who are, you know, winning the league, getting lots of minutes this year? They're going to have to start going out on loan or sitting on the bench potentially.
Well, they already are. And I think, I mean, you look at the number of players that have gone out on loan already for Evergrande, it's crazy. And if the rumors are true about Hao Junmin and Nico Yanaris both going there at the end of the season, that's even more. And there's, you can only play 11 guys. And I think it doesn't benefit the league. It doesn't benefit the national team. It doesn't benefit Evergrande to have all of these guys and just have them out on loan and just feed them to different teams. But I mean, this was the year for someone else to win the league. And I think Evergrande pretty much is guaranteed the title for the foreseeable future. It's sort of a depressing take, and maybe I'll take a step back from the ledge next week. But this week, that's how it feels.
Well, you know, we'll see. I think there's a lot to get into in terms of how many of those rumors do actually end up being, you know, reality as well. And we'll go through those naturalizations and transfers if and when they do happen, and what it means for the future of the league and so on. But taking a step back, I think Brandon made a good point there, Cam. This was the year for someone else to win the league again. And Shanghai International Port Group, reigning champions, I had them down to repeat this year, I've got to say, in my predictions. And four straight draws have just seen them fall completely out of the picture. Do you think it is the absence of Wu Lei finally biting them? Did they get a bit lucky with injuries and suspensions last year, and their squad's just showing how shallow it is now? Is there something else that's going on there?
I really don't know, to be honest. I think that SABG's problems are more at the back than up front. I think that's why, until this point, the absence of Wuley has not really been noticed that much. I mean, they've been losing. I mean, they lost like a really good goal against Starnef, which was, you could say it was unlucky, but that was not something SABG last year would have done. It's been a pretty fallow period for them in the last month or so, apart from their victory in the cup against Evergrande, drawn away to Wuhan. It's not, again, a pretty poor result. Aronovich is a new guy coming in. I mean, he's came in and he's scored, I think three of the last four games. He's pretty much scored in most of the games he's played in. So it's just quite difficult to really pinpoint where they're at. I think it's, just one of these, you can't play to on that kind of top gear all the time. Maybe they're just going through like a spell where they're just not quite been able to grind out the results.
Yeah, and we should probably hold off on the post-mortem until we see just how they go in some of these big cup games coming up, because, you know, they could end up with nothing. They could end up continental champions at this point. So there is still something to play for there. Not necessarily the case in the capital with Guan having gone out of basically all the competitions now. I want to really go into the Schmidt kind of sacking or parting of ways, Brandon. I mean, we can again do some more detailed debriefs on Guan over the next few weeks, but in a nutshell, how much of this comes down to the manager? Where has it all gone wrong, do you think?
That's a really tough call. I think Schmidt deserves a lion's share of the blame for how things were going, and I think his firing at the time. You know, it's sort of crazy to bring in my biggest issue, I think, is not with his firing, but with his replacement, someone that doesn't know Chinese football, that doesn't know anything about the team, and is coming in 10 days before the biggest game the club has played in years, basically. I think Schmidt just, he was honestly one of the best coaches, probably the best coach Guan has ever had. Excellent job that he did, but he wasn't the best with adapting or changing his tactics. And when Vieira went down with an injury, it completely sank him, and he was just completely lost, and it sunk him.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting to get input from fans who watch the games every week, because they tend to see tactical things and also just the general mood around the side in a way that you don't necessarily get from watching highlights or even just kind of catching games on TV. I mean, Cam, from the outside, it seems indefensible to sack a manager of Schmidt's kind of reputation and track record and who had them going so well in the league. Are you convinced in any way by some of the noises that have come out of Beijing trying to justify it?
Well, Brandon said it himself, he's the best coach Guan's ever had. So why you sack him? It's that simple.
You sack him because he wasn't getting the job done. He's the best. I mean, he has the best mind, but there, you know, even a genius sort of gets stuck, and you know, you need new eyes for a problem sometimes. And Schmidt did the same thing three times in a row and got, or four times in a row, got the same result basically. And even, I mean, even during the 10-game winning streak, there are a lot of fans that are unhappy, and the 10 wins sort of papered over that. But the reality was, you look at some of those matches, you look at, say, the Renhe match, you look at the Hebei match, where both of those matches were 1-0 wins that Guan barely pulled out and got some lucky goals. You know, he was too stuck in his ways, and he wasn't willing to adapt. He wasn't willing to play around with things. And when he did in the cup, it was just odd. You know, you could basically predict exactly what he would do, what the substitution would be. And it was the same one, and it got the same results. And so, they're desperate, and the thinking was that if you fire him, you bring someone in, you get that new manager bump, and maybe it works out that you have a chance to win the league. But if Schmidt stayed, there'd be no chance of winning the league. I don't know. I don't fully agree with it, but I definitely I'm more agree than disagree with it.
I think it's a ridiculous decision. I think you know that.
Not at all ridiculous. I mean, that's like, say, I mean, the guy, he lost the three straight games exactly the same way.
But he won 10 in a row.
I think.
Right, but you can't, I mean, you win 10 in a row and you end up finishing second, and what do? You did nothing.
But he didn't finish second. It's halfway through the season. It's just totally madness, Brandon. Didn't it be daft, man?
It's probably better than where they're going to finish at this rate. I mean, as well.
What do you actually expect? What does Guan expect from coach?
Expect him to win the title. Well, that was the expectations this year. That was what you predicted they'd do too.
Exactly. They're halfway through the season.
It wasn't. There's 10 games left.
Ten games left.
No, I mean, I kind of agree in that from the outside, it still seems remarkable to fire him. One of the really good points that came up there, and that I want to come back to, is actually this idea of a lack of forward planning from the clubs a lot of the time. So much of what you're saying, Brandon, reminds me, in a slightly different circumstance, of when Shenhua got shot of Manzano after he'd taken them to was it third or fourth, and they had their best season in the league for ages. But I was a huge advocate of getting rid of him because there was no plan B. The football wasn't particularly entertaining, and they really rode their luck in a lot of those games that year. But it's one thing to get rid of the manager if you have a better replacement who's then coming in. If you don't, and if you're casting around for plan B or plan C, and you bring in someone who's patently worse, then I do think that reflects badly on the club and kind of their lack of ability to get an additional or a better option lined up.
It just shows that Guan is just as fucked up as the rest of the CSL. Like, if there was an issue with Schmidt...
No, the fire...
If there was an issue with Schmidt, right, they would have known it at the start of the season. So it just, I mean, what do they expect? It's like, it looks like they're just waiting to sack him. Like, oh shit, he's won 10 games in a row. Oh shit, how are we going to be able to sack him now? So if there was a problem, they should have changed him earlier, because I don't really see how suddenly he becomes a manager who is not able to deliver good results to the team just because he had a run of a few defeats. I just think that's just completely ridiculous.
No, but that's not it though, because, and again, this is, I mean, you've been complaining about in the past when we've talked about this discussion and saying how it's idiotic and everything, but fans have been seeing, people have been seeing the issues in Schmidt's management for months. It's nothing new. It's not like this is the first time that this is coming out that, oh my God, we've lost three games, let's fire him. That's not the case. The problems have been obvious, and he wasn't willing to change. It was the same lineup, it was the same players, it was the same formations, and even when it wasn't working very well, it was the same substitutions, and it wasn't playing around with the formation and everything. And that's the thing with Genesio, why I'm not convinced he's the right manager, and the way they brought him in and everything, and the contract, the six-month contract to the end of the year is idiotic. But the issue is that, I mean, the Evergrande match, he saw that things weren't working. He changed formations two times. He took off Bakambu, which is something that Schmidt was never willing to do, and played Zhang Yunin and Wang Zeming together. I would have wished he would have done that from the start. I don't think Bakambu should have played that match, but that might have been too radical for him. I think if Zhang Yunin doesn't, or if Bakambu doesn't play that match, and you have Kim Min-jae in defense, then you don't have Liu Huan on the pitch, and you Evergrande don't have those two goals. But I mean, all of this, it's all looking back, and fans love to play this the Monday morning quarterback kind of thing, but I don't have any problem with firing Schmidt. It's something that almost, I mean, as I said, you want to see it, it's something to try, because what Schmidt was trying wasn't working, and if he's just going to keep trying to do the same thing, you have to try something else.
We'll move on to some more esoteric questions, I think, in the second half of the show this week. But before we do so, it's time for the return of the beloved Phenomenon of the Week poll.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
And what feels like a very long time ago, we had a landslide victory in the voting for the Jiangsu Stadium experience, as so nicely described from an away fans perspective from Brandon there, with Elkerson and his hat-trick coming in second, and another Fernandinho screamer once again underloved and coming in third in the voting. That does mean that I get to go first this week. And I think there's probably only one place to start, because I'm going to have to nominate Elkerson for becoming, and we talked to how facetious this record is, because the CSL doesn't really stand alone. You know, it's the name of the league. There's been professional top flight football in China for a much longer time, etc., etc. But he did break Ule's record as the all-time top CSL scorer this week, and it looks like he's fired a team to the title yet again. So more love for the chunky Brazilian who may soon be a chunky Chinese forward. Cam, I believe you get to go. We can just nominate him every week from here on in, I think. He's the new Qin Sheng. Cam, you get to go second. Who are you going to put up to the poll this week?
For me, it has to be a phenomenon, a meteorological phenomenon. That is the so-called typhoon, which apparently passed by Shanghai and left scenes of unbelievable devastation, and also caused the Shenhua game to be cancelled. So, yeah. So-called typhoons.
And Brandon, you've got a chunky Brazilian, a non-typhoon, eclectic bag as always. What are you going to bring to the table?
I'd protest against your non-Brazilian, because like you said, it was well before the CSL. The CSL is bullshit, saying just the CSL. Anyway, so I'm going to go with something a little more serious and go with, Monday morning was made... it was sad enough with the Evergrande loss, but it was made all the more sadder when we found out that Walter Martinez passed away in New York, only 37 years old. He spent three times with Guoan over the years. and just a wonderful player, always had a smile on his face, great with the fans, and the fans outpouring for him has been huge and has gone on for the past couple of days. I came from there to do this, and there were about 20 people outside of Goomti tonight, so to his passing, to his family, I just want to pass along our condolences. And it's not necessarily a phenomenon, but I think it's this is the place to mention it.
Yeah. Well, moving on to things that we can hopefully look forward to. How well can we sell what's going on for the rest of the season then? We were looking forward to this title race. It looks like we're not going to have one now. Cam, is it fair to say that the league season's in danger of fizzling out? And where are you looking for kind of excitement and drama in the next few months of Chinese football?
The league titles race, as we discussed, is definitely in danger of petering out if it's not already done so. I don't really see anything that exciting on the horizon. The relegation battle, of course, always tends to go to the wire. The Chinese national team's got a World Cup qualifiers coming up soon. That's going to bring a lot of drama. There might be a lot of drama related to Elkerson playing for China if that actually happens. Other than that, though, to be really honest, I'm not particularly excited about what lies in store for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that'll certainly give us plenty to talk about, and the naturalisation topic is one that we're very much kind of going to come back to. Brandon, I mean, is it fair to say that there's nothing to look forward to in the league? Should we be getting excited about the race for second and automatic group stage qualification in the Champions League? There's still a bit of jeopardy and drama at the bottom of the table, right?
Yeah, I mean, if other than Shenhua, no Chinese side has really messed up that playoff to get into the Champions League. So I'm not really concerned about second or third so much. The bottom of the table, it's starting to get you're starting to see sides pull away, and really right now we're talking about Tianhai and Shenzhen and to some extent Hebei, but I think Hebei is more or less safe unless something really bad happens. This obviously Shenhua, the same is true there. So if you're looking for drama, there's not really much drama in the CSL, but there is of course the CFA Cup, and that should present some interesting matches and potentially a very interesting final. And you know, you have League One is very exciting, so there's a lot going on. But yeah, the CSL, the title race is over. Cammy is playing it safe, but it's over.
A bit of reverse psychology from Beijing there, undoubtedly. We did get a question in from James Reeve about how extremely close and exciting the League One promotion race is. We will do that justice with a proper section in a future pod, and I assure you, League One fans, we know you're out there. We'll have to get Jamie on board for that one as well. It would be rude not to. Brandon mentioned the CFA Cup there, Cam. I mean, there's a couple of absolutely massive semi-finals coming up there with Shanghai International Port Group and Shandong facing off. Those are generally good quality games. And a resurgent Shenhua and an informed Dalian with Benitez looking to seal his first half year in China with a trophy potentially. I mean, which of those games do you think is going to be a key one for the neutrals to watch?
I think Shenhua Dalian's got a lot of backstory to it. Of course, you've got the wonderfully mysterious Zhou Jun, who was Dalian's CEO, chief of operations. He's now back at Shenhua, someone who has a very checkered history. We've talked about him many times before. He provides a bit of a subplot to the match. Also, Choi coming from Dalian, getting fired by Dalian, and then thanks to Zhou Jun turning up at Shenhua, he's had a good start, but let's see how that goes. Of course, Dalian's also got a couple of former Shenhua players, Qin Sheng and Li Jianbin. And, of course, it could be another Shanghai derby if Shenhua and SIPG both win the semis. So that's perhaps something to look forward to.
Yeah, I get the feeling that that final were it to happen would end very differently to the last one. Do you have a team who you really kind of fancy for the cup at this point, Brandon? Is it fair to say anyone's favourites? Or, you know, do the vagaries of knockout football still give everyone a good chance for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to kind of put SIPG up clear above everyone else. They are the best quality side left in this, but like you said, I mean, knockout football always produces surprises, and I can see if it turned out to be a Shenhua SIPG final, you know, Shenhua could do it. I think that's what I'm hoping for right now is a SIPG Shenhua final. I think that would really bring the excitement and sort of bring the drama that will be missing in the latter stages of this season.
Well, you got a nice little audio clip there for our Shanghai International Pod Group listeners to get out, where you said they're the best team in the competition. Never let it be said that we don't give praise where it's due to that side. From a Shenhua perspective, I would absolutely fear a final like that. I don't know what the mood is around the club, Cam. I mean, I always had a feeling, and when we talked about this in the preview pods in 2017, that the way the two-legged final went, with it being at Hongkou first, and you've got to remember that Shanghai International Port Group at that point hadn't got the monkey off their back of never having won a trophy. There was a lot of pressure on them, and you could see things going basically how they did, and Shenhua kind of nicking it on away goals as they did. I think it'd be an absolute massacre this time. Is there a bit of unfounded confidence with, you know, the Wookiee still firing strong over there?
I think maybe being a wee bit pessimistic, Steve. I think that the rookie, he's definitely made a massive impact. That's undeniable. I can't remember a CSL signing who made such an impact. He's really been like a bomb going off. But it's early days, and Shenhua were just so completely abject before. They really needed someone like him to bring some balance and restore the confidence, which was really badly missing from the side. As for the prospects, if they got to such a final, I mean, it would be exciting for Chinese football. Again, I think it would be a very different game to the last one, in which was 2 years ago. I think that there's definitely some kind of taste, thirst rather, for Shenhua to play SIPG in a derby sooner rather than later, since the gap between the teams has been closed somewhat. But it is Shenhua, and I think as far as the reconstruction goes, it's very early days, and I wouldn't be madly optimistic about the chances in a cup final again either.
Yeah, I would be watching that Shanghai derby from behind the sofa were it to come about. Although always nice to hear a bit of confidence about the team. One other kind of question, or really it's kind of thoughts and prayers coming in from a listener, a boy named Sue, just sending some positive thoughts for Shenzhen to stay up. They do look fairly doomed, do you think, Brandon? I mean, they're not in as bad a shape as Renhe, but I mean, a bit like Guan, they've dispensed with a coach and brought in a guy in Donadoni with a mixed track record, never coached outside Italy, no experience of China at all. I mean, in fairness, we made fun of Chongqing for bringing in Cruyff in similar circumstances last year, and look how they've gone since then, but the momentum around the club is not good at the moment, is it?
No, not at all, but, you know, They also have some tough matches. They have Guan, they have Evergrande, they have some of the top sides remaining. But at the same time, I think this is sort of an interesting, this year is sort of an odd year for the CSL. You have now a period where after this coming round, I think we go 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. I mean, there's a long period with no matches, and then a couple matches, and then another long period without any matches. So it's a time where a new manager can really come in and really leave a mark on the side in ways that that he hasn't been able to. So I mean, it'll be interesting to see if things will work out, but the manager has the time now to sort of adjust and make things work. So we'll see if he does or not.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We're going into a part of the season where it's going to be incredibly disjointed. In a way, maybe it's good that the league's fizzled out a little bit, because keeping the hype train going through all of these breaks for a title race might be a little bit beyond us. I mean, Cam, do you think these extended breaks are going to help the national side, or help the teams remaining in continental competition, or are we going to see more kind of flat-footed displays from these kind of military training camps?
These extended international breaks are totally pointless. All they do is give the vast majority of Chinese professional players no football to play for weeks on end. And it's from this pool of players who aren't in an international team that the next batch of international players will come from in the future. So it's just a complete waste of time.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that. And we'll have plenty of time to weigh in on just how pointless these breaks are as we go through them. But don't worry, listeners, we have plenty of topics to talk about. So we're certainly not going to run out of steam and be kicking our heels anytime soon, including some postmortems on the sides at the top and how they imploded, and plenty of love to give to the cup competitions, League One, and any other areas that you want to continue suggesting we go into in a bit more depth. There should be a good few weeks for us to branch out a little bit. Hope you've enjoyed having us back. If you have enjoyed the pod and do continue to enjoy it, please do rate, leave a review, share with your friends. It goes a long way. And of course, consider checking out our Patreon page. All of those links are available on Twitter and the website. Cam, great having you back. Hopefully there's no bad weather that disrupts us again in the future as we get back into a regular recording schedule.
Yeah, cheers, Steve. It's good to be back. It was a bit of a nightmare journey to return to Shanghai, but I'm glad to see that the city was still standing after yet another massive typhoon smashed into the metropolis.
Are you talking about Jiujun again? Brandon, well, hopefully you step back from the ledge whether there is a typhoon or not, because we do need your insight and input as we go through some of these long international breaks coming up through the rest of the season. And I think you can prepare yourself for a bit of a forensic autopsy of Guan next week.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that, but let's do it.
And we'll see if we can get you to praise the team in red once again. And I'm going to try and break our season record on that one. Well, it's been great to have both of you back. This has been as eclectic as ever. It has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. And I am, as always, your host, Steve Crooks. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。